Good afternoon, America. Good morning, good day, wherever part of the country you're in. This is Eugene B. Colson with the radio show on the Internet Radio, BBS Radio, Mind Controlled America. If you watch television, you go to church, you read the newspaper, you are under some form of mind control. But another aspect that's connected with mind control is the alien ET, at least my experience, I'm not saying everyone's, is heavily involved. And my guest today is Dr. Jason Rand. Dr. Rand, how are you today?
I'm fine, sir. How are you today?
I'm fine. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm in my golden years. I'm over 60, and I've been active in the field of ufology and natural sciences almost my entire life. I have an interesting background. I come from a politically savvy family. We helped elect no less than 5 presidents. I've been involved in government work. I'm also a member of the Russian Academy of Sciences in a division called Energy Informative Sciences Division. And as such, I've had a chance to investigate and talk about and attend conventions and seminars. And the field of ufology today is not what it was back in the 50s. I remember the old tongue-in-cheek about everybody was seeing flying saucers and the comments about the people in Michigan that had that sighting when J. Allen Hynek called it swamp gas. All that kind of stuff is all part of the history and the lore of ufology. But what I'd like to zero in on is that the state of present-day events, as we know them right now, and I don't want to drift into a conspiracy situation, because that's not where I'm coming from in the endeavor of this project and this book that we've written. First of all, I want to tell you really very quickly that the basis of our conversation with you is around the fact that I would like to tell you, gentlemen, and your audience, that we've just written a book. It's called The Return of Planet X. The Return of Planet X.
You know, what's interesting about that, Dr. Rand, was about 2 months ago, I was sitting at Starbucks, and it's interesting the kind of people I meet there. I've met the number 2 guy at the GAO office, retired generals. But about 2 months ago, I was sitting there, and a gentleman came out with his coffee, got his pack of cigarettes out, was getting comfortable. And I started talking to him. I said, "Oh, you down here on vacation?" He goes, "Yes." I go, "Where are you from?" He goes, "Well, up north." I said, "What do you do?" He goes, "Well, I'm into optics." I said, "What type of optics?" He goes, outer space type. I said, "Oh, you're an astronomer." He goes, "Yes, I am." I said, "Is Planet X real?" And he goes, "Yes." I said, "Did you see it?" He says, "Numerous times." I says, "Is it smooth?" He says, "Well, we believe it's smooth. It's smooth on the side you can see, but we believe it's rocky on the other side." And before I could leave, he nervously split. Before I could ask any more questions, he boogied.
He's gone.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I'd throw that out there.
This is not an uncommon story. I myself had a most interesting experience with a person who works at Cape Kennedy, Cape Canaveral, the old Cape Canaveral. I was on my way to Moscow to take part in a big meeting that we had regarding a project that we've got called Project Blue Light. And as such, I was sitting one seat from a very distinguished looking woman. She had like kind of a business suit on, and she was very captivating. She was absolutely delightful to talk to and to look at. And I struck up a conversation with her to find out that she's with, in fact, the Mission Planning Division for NASA at Cape Canaveral, Cape Kennedy. So I was chit-chatting back and forth, and we got to talking about UFOs and ETs. And every time I got near the subject of UFOs and ETs, I could physically and sensitively detect her tension. So I decided not to play with that. So then I dove into it. I said, "By the way, have you ever heard of Planet X?" And my dear friend, she almost crushed the cup that was in her hand and almost spilled the coffee. She was drinking one of those white styrofoam cups.
Might I also add, I've had another guest on the show, and every UFO organization, and when he brings up Planet X, everybody runs like hell.
Well, you know, it's so interesting, because if you Google up right now Planet X, you're going to get almost 25 million references, hits, websites, and references. 25 million. Now, someone out there, other than the government, and other than NASA, and other than the astronomers, and other than all these other agencies, and, you know, we just had a very, very important election. And what I'd like to say is that the incoming president-elect is going to be forced into dealing with the UFO ET issue far more quickly than he realizes, because they are about ready to make themselves known very shortly. As you know, in my work, in my book, I wanted to tell you about the book real quick.
And why don't you throw in your contact information while you're at it?
I'll do that. We'll get that out of the way, because the first thing that happens after I do an interview on the telephone is that I'll get like 50 or 60 hits from the radio station because people need more information. So the book is called Return to Planet X, 342 pages, beautiful illustrated. It's an educational adventure. It's almost a sci-fi run through reality, only to find out that this reality is true. Concerning our concepts and ideas regarding the subject of what we call Planet X, which is basically a generic name for almost any planetary body that's now threatening our world. But Planet X, in this case, we believe, is a small, medium-sized brown dwarf star that may be round and smooth on one side and rough on the other, but I don't buy that. I don't buy that. Okay?
How big do you think it is?
It could be conservatively the size of Saturn, but 30 times its mass.
Well, the astronomer,
but it's huge.
The astronomer, I asked him the same question, and he said, "Well, it's a little bit bigger than our moon."
Yeah, a little bit. Yes, slightly.
Well,
now don't let us not disparage the astronomers and the scientists who are avidly working on this, because I don't want to belittle their effort. They are doing the right thing. They are investigating it. I believe there's a lot of research going on. I believe that huge telescopic array that was built at the South Pole over the last 2 years is all part of our wanting to be the first to be able to view this object as it comes sailing in at us. So I think they're already shooting it. I think they're already have sighted it. I think it's now a foredrawn conclusion, and there's not much they can do about it, except finally come forth with the truth. Now, if I'm wrong and it's not a brown dwarf star, then whatever it is, whether it's a full body or a smoldering, whatever it is, it sure conforms to an object that we believe returns to visit this solar system about every 36,000 to 4,000 years. It's on a long elliptical cycle that takes it far beyond the reaches of our known solar system. And then at its magical point, it makes its turn, and it comes flying back in again. Now, we believe that the last time this happened was in 1447 BCE. Now, after I throw that date at you, let me give you the email to reach us. That would be skipper@att.net. That's real easy, skipper@att.net. To order a book, 1-800-247-6553. 1-800-247-6553, or go to the website, returntoplanetx.com, and there's a hyphen between the T and the X, returntoplanetx.com. Now, with that said, the book is in all bookstores. It's all over the Internet. We're on eBay. We're cheap books, we're all over the place. It's easy to get a book. Just go to your bookseller, wherever they are, and just ask for it. Okay.
Not to disparage some of the things, the remarks you've made, but on the conspiracy side, because I've grown up in part of it, as part of their mind control program, there is a fake UFO invasion that is planned during the tribulation.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised. Anything to create confusion.
Yeah, like the grays are made in Area 51, Russia, China, Europe, Australia has similar sites, and quite a few of the others, because I've been there in 2003.
But what? I agree that there is an endemic problem, and if that reality be as stringent as you say it is, then that's another whole problem, which would be another whole show. Okay, I want to zero in on the immediacy of the biblical prophecy surrounding this event that's known. There's a date. It's very interesting. December 21st, 2012. That is a date that is believed, and archaeology supports it, as do the legends and the spiritual prophecies of almost all of the Native American Indian tribes, including those of South America and Central America, that say that cosmic time, as mankind knows it, that cosmic time, as mankind knows it, will end on that date. Now, I don't interpret that as being the end of the world or the end of the universe or the end of the solar system. What I interpret that to mean is the end of that age, that present age, from when our solar system slides into a new relationship with the galactic plane of our solar system, which is another whole show.
Well, my experience with the ETs, the Greys and whatnot, the mind control and all that, it all has a satanic tie to it. And they are trying their best to cause the tribulation to start the bad portions early.
Oh, I don't disagree with that concept. See, the forces of good and evil are... Now, that's another show. See, you know what you're doing here. You're throwing all these new ideas in, which are absolutely fabulous, but they're taking us away from what I'd like to talk about.
Well, the only reason I said it was because of biblical prophecy, the end time scenario.
Well, I want to throw something at you from biblical prophecy. That's where I was heading.
Okay.
All right. So what I'd like to do now is I don't want to keep steering into a conspiracy curve here.
I want to give you
a clearer picture from my own research,
okay,
so that if it overlaps yours, then you'll see a nice comparative venue of one ideas to another. So hear me out, all right?
Okay.
Now, I first became aware of the term wormwood at age 16 when I first read the book of Revelation, which is the last book of the Christian Bible in the New Testament, okay? The reason I didn't get to it until age 16 was I was born and raised in a strict Catholic family, and I went to an Irish Catholic grammar school until the sixth grade, at which time I broke out. But that's another story. So they never taught from the book of Revelation. Back in the 50s, the Catholic Church never put much emphasis on teaching about anything that was in the book of Revelation. And every time I would ask the question why, I was promptly told that is not part of modern-day teaching. That was written for a long time ago, so don't worry about it. So I disregarded it. And it wasn't until I got to chapter 8, and I read verse 11, and the quote was, "And the name of the star was Wormwood." Wormwood. Now, that started me on a research at age 16, because at age 15, and I will give you only one little tidbit of my forthcoming book, okay, about me being on the ship. Remember we talked about that?
Yeah.
All right. I will give you this much from the forthcoming book. At age 11, I was a willing participant. I was a contactee. I was not abducted. I was not messed with. I was a guest on an extraterrestrial craft at age 11 for almost 5.5 hours in the wilds of Manitoba, Canada. And that event, that 5.5 hours, forever reshaped and set the statutes which would become my life story and my life's mission. So with that in mind, I can assure you that there are such things as extraterrestrials. They are humanoid. They do have better plans for us. They don't always interfere, but they can, and they probably will once again. Which brings me now to the premise of my book. I teased you with the fact that, in my opinion, we think that the last time that Wormwood actually made a visitation through the solar system was around the year 1447 BCE, which happens to coincide with the year that modern archaeology and biblical theologians believe was the approximate date that Moses led the Israelites from out of bondage in Egypt under Pharaoh. Remember all the miracles that were attributed to his staff? Do you remember that? Do you ever see the movie?
Oh yeah.
All right.
Turning into snakes.
The snakes and the bugs and the rivers turning to blood and the firstborn dying and Moses actually stopped the motion of the sun for more than 3 hours, and it freaked everybody out. Well, those are all the things that happen when a large celestial body could affect the gravitational pull, spin, and direction of other planets by its being in near avoidance because of the huge electromagnetic and gravitational field forces that surround a typical small brown dwarf star. If it is one, it would send out huge gravitational waves because of its mass. It's 60 times the mass of Saturn, but the size of Saturn. So you can imagine how powerful. Now, if this event did happen then, causing all of these things, it would help explain how the sea parted and how the earth shook and how the sun stopped and how the rivers turned to red and the insects came and the firstborn died and all the weird things that happened, because these are all the characteristics of what happens when the potential of something like a brown dwarf star would approach the solar system. Now, don't ask me to give you further proof that any of this is real. Now, here's the problem with it. There's lots of science to support it. There's lots of theory, and there's mucho type of ancient prophecies to support it. But the problem is, we've never been around to see one, because most times, after it passes, that present society is pretty much reduced to rubble. Globally, we talk about it time and time again. We go through eons and eons of time tracing this event back. So when we bring you the evidence, by the way, we have over 2,000 references placed at each end of a chapter. You'll find a whole list of references cited so that when you read something, you can go right away and check it to be sure that I know what I'm talking about, that the date's right, that the amount is right, that the quotient is right, and that the motive is right. It's very important when you write a book like this, which could affect the destiny and the lives of millions and millions and possibly billions of people, that the facts have to be right. The book has to make sense. I have to have a timeline. I have to have an outline of events. I have to draw a conclusion, and I have to be able to back up the evidence. The interesting part is that all the evidence that we presented, mind you, this book took more than 7.5 years to research and write, and another year or so to publish and put it out. But everything that we wrote 3, 4, 5 years ago has all happened on time, on schedule, and right to the fact of each event, including the rise in hurricanes and tornadoes and cyclones and firestorms and volcanic activity. So if this event is real, this new president and his administration, along with the present Senate and legislatures, not only federally but on the national level, statewide, we're all going to be suddenly faced with a lot more bigger problem than balancing the budget and bailing out General Motors and Citibank and all the rest of them. If the present weather conditions continue to deteriorate, like we've talked about in the book and that are happening even now, this moment, as we're speaking, then we will have about 2.5 to 3 years to suddenly get it all right. Everybody's going to have to come together to survive this thing. And above and beyond the subject of terrorism, well, that's when the terrorists are going to feel the most emboldened. What do? They strike at the target of least resistance. They call them soft targets. Well, imagine if a country suddenly loses its seaports and its airports to a major series. Let's say that a series of horrendous earthquakes destroys large portions of, of mainland China. Imagine how vulnerable she would feel, right? And she's got something like a billion men under arms. Can you imagine? China has an army of a billion men under arms. Now, we're facing different types of threats, and Mother Nature could be putting us to the worst test imaginable. That is a test by attrition. If the planet starts to become affected by this incoming celestial body, there could be a number of things that happen. Weather will continue to escalate into more severe patterns. There could be increased earthquake patterns. Volcanoes could start going off. All kinds of things could start happening. And if these catastrophes develop, we've got to realize that we've got troops spread out all over the world defending all these so-called hotspots. Yeah, Afghanistan, yes, it's extremely important, and so is the continuing war in Iraq. However, we have thousands and thousands of troops and dozens of battalions of soldiers in all these outward places. Get them out of Korea. Get them out of Germany. Get them out of Japan. Bring them home, because we're going to need someone to protect our own borders. If the northern borders collapse, and if the southern border, which doesn't work very well anyway...
Oh, it works fine for Mexico.
Well, let's assume... Do you realize that Mexico City sits atop one of the most sensitive and one of the most vulnerable earthquake faults there is? Because basically, Mexico City is built on the bottom of a huge, huge, huge lake that eventually dried up. And what's underneath it is basically sand. And underneath that is this huge fault. So if you lose a major city like Mexico City, where are over, what is it, 4 million, 6 million people?
Well, I think
where
there's more than 10 million.
Where are people going to flee to? Well, they're all going to come north, I would think, right?
They'd go somewhere, that's for sure.
All right. Now, I'm not saying this to inflame people's passions. And I'm not talking to you about an event that I wish would happen. All you have to do is read the tea leaves, read the papers, read the books, go to the internet, watch the movies and television and press, and find the information. It's all over the place. Everyone knows that there's something really wrong with the structure and the functioning of the planet. Everyone knows that. Not everyone agrees as to what the source is, but I will tell you this much. If this election is any indication of what people are expecting to have happen and to get better, then once again, the new president-elect and the House and the Senate and the state houses are going to be severely tested. So let's hope that partisanship and bickering and all this awful rancor that takes place ceases, and ceases pretty fast. And whatever problem ails General Motors and all the rest of them, they better figure out that they're going to have to solve on their own, because pretty soon I think that this government and its people and this nation is going to be involved in a very serious fight for its survival, and not necessarily against outside enemies, but also those. But I think that our planet is due for about another year and a half or 2 years of increased physical stress, and I think that we're going to be seeing worst examples of natural disasters. For instance, how many cities do we have to lose? Well, we lost New Orleans, and then we lost Galveston Island, and then we lost a good portion of Galveston itself, and then the Houston Ship Channel, and then, of course, there was the last 5 years of devastating hurricanes that have torn through the Gulf Coast 3, 4, 5 times. Now, if that's not an example of things getting bad, then you tell me where I'm wrong. This last hurricane season that we had was anything but predictable, and it was extremely costly. And yeah, we handled it, but we got lucky. You know, we got really, really, really lucky with those last several storms. Okay, back to my point, and that is, we're not prepared because no one's listening, and although my book is starting to make an impact, and it is, slowly, when the ETs start making themselves known, or if the UFO situation suddenly escalates and people start having weird experiences again, then this will add to the mystique and the confusion, and also to the attention of the federal authorities. Now, there are those of us in the UFO field who stand ready and willing and able to become translators and to help the administration at the state and federal level make these transitions. We're also involved with people in Russia through Dr. Marina Popovich. She's a world-renowned ufologist, and she's one of Russia's most treasured heroines. She's the lady who set all the records and became the first lady to fly the MiG and to break the sound barrier and a whole bunch of wonderful things. Anyway, we're putting an organization together called Project Blue Light. Do you remember Project Blue Book?
I vaguely heard of it.
Vaguely heard of it, sure. Right. Well, as you know, Project Blue Book was one of the most sophisticated misinformation operations ever conducted, and that's as far as I'll go with that criticism. Everyone knows what I'm referring to. Anyway, we're going to, in fact, turn what was then the old Project Blue Book. We are now going to reactivate that whole concept of research and information gathering, and we are going to start an organization called Project Blue Light. And it will involve civilians running the UFO information collection operation, not necessarily the military. Now, we'll share the information with the military if they ask it, but instead of the military controlling it, we're going to control it from a civilian standpoint.
Oh, yeah, we've seen how the military has controlled it since 1947.
But that's to be understood. But look, let's not be naive about this. Everybody knows there's UFOs and ETs. Come on. The American public is so hip to all this that it sounds ludicrous for the government to assume that there's anything but a lack of secrecy around the whole subject. So sooner or later, they just might as well say, well, actually, you know, you're right. And it's not all that bad, and here it is. Now, I think that this issue is going to be forced, and I think it's going to come within the next 6 to 8 months, because the activity will be picking up. It's not because I've done anything or I've said anything. It's because the phenomenon itself, I believe, will start to increase as we approach 2009, going into deeply into 2009, swinging into 2010. 2011 is going to be a bear before 2012 comes. So, one of the reasons we wrote the book was to demonstrate that the best way to prepare for the future is to understand it from the inside out. So we had to go forward in time to that date and work our way backward. Now, let's talk about the date for a second, okay? If we're talking about December 21st, 2012. December 21st, 2012. That's also the winter solstice date, but that's okay. Now, I'd like to play a little game with you guys for a second called numerology, okay? So just follow me. If anyone out there has a piece of paper and a pen or a pencil, jot down 12-21-12. 12-21-12. That's the numerical breakdown for December 12, 21st, 2012. 12, 21, 12. Okay? Now, if you have that in your mind or written down, we're going to go. In numerology, every number has a corresponding letter associated with it. In other words, 1 is A, 2 is B, 3 is C, etc. Up the scale. Okay? So, if we attribute the date of 12-21-12 to letters, here's what we get. The date 12-21-12 reads as ABBAAB. Now, when you consider that the Hebrew language is read from right to left in reverse, this date would then read BAABBA, Ba'aba. Okay? Now, the Hebrew translation. Here's where we're going to slide on you, okay? This is going to blow you away. The Hebrew translation for Ba'aba is Father comes, Father is coming. End. In the Judeo-Christian religions, God is always referred to as God the Father. The Father is God. They're all one. Okay, so that would translate into Father or God comes or Father, God is coming. Now, isn't it a little strange that those particular numbers from that particular date would render in numerological translation the fact that the Father God comes? Okay, now, I'm going to jump forward to a Christian concept called, actually a modern day concept, the word rapture. We'll apply it to a number of issues, but let's get it discussed from a Christian perspective first. The word rapture itself never, ever, ever does appear anywhere in the Bible, Old or New Testament. It's a concept that was kind of spun into fashion in the late 20s by a Christian minister who literally translated the words of Jesus, especially when he was talking in the Sermon on the Mount. And when they asked him when he would come, and then he said all the facts, and that they would see him in the sky, that when the Son of God comes, everyone will see him in the sky. Okay. So he developed this theory that at the end times, Jesus has promised to come back and pick up his flock. He's going to come back and, quote, as the preacher said, to rapture his flock. That's how the word rapture got started. Well, it's widely believed these days, not only in the Christian religion, but interestingly enough, all of the ancient religions and all of the ancient Indian cultures, all the way back, always spoke about being, quote, raptured from the end times. This theory about the end times and the rapture is not new. It goes back as far as you want to. It's just that we're living at a moment in time. This life that we're sharing, I believe, actually is taking place during one of these so-called end-time scenarios. Okay? Now, I believe that this planet and its solar system and our position within the galactic plane, this is all part of a giant cosmic calendar-like sequential set of events that none of us can stop. We are all part of it, whether we like it or not, but we are destined to play a part in this. Incidentally, this would be a great science fiction movie. Okay, we could.
They're coming out with the one, the day, yeah, remake of the day the world ends.
Yeah, they've redone the day the earth stood still. Well, guess what? Want to know
Hello?
Real life? Somebody's gonna kill it. Okay, I killed it. I killed the phone. If these events come off as we believe they're going to come off, we are living in one of the most exciting times that you could possibly ever want to experience. Okay, the question is how many of us are going to survive it, and that's another reason I wrote the book. The more informed you are as an individual, the more you have your sensibilities together, the more you have your conscience under control, the more you have your motives for your lifestyle and your continuing evolution as part of the complex human mind that is so distorting this planet. Once you figure out where you are in this mess and what you can possibly do about it, you can then begin to think how important you are as an individual, first of all. You are responsible to yourself for everything that happens to you, everything you say, everything you do, every time you touch someone or talk to someone or greet someone. It has a causal effect. Part of it is spiritual, and also part of it is consequential to you living out your life and your karma versus theirs. Can you imagine? Every person out there that you interface with is living out or trying to live out and understand their own complex karmic development. First of all, most of them probably don't realize what the word karma means or how it fits into anything, or if it's even relatively important. I guess I got off the subject of Planet X. But everything that we're talking about is now becoming a consequential effect of what's going to happen if these events take place like we think they will. I want to go back to this Father comes, Father is coming bit. We talked about the rapture, and I believe now that most modern-day Christian sects are very aware of the fact, and they do believe that Jesus is coming back. And I want to throw a bit of New Testament scripture at you and ask you a direct question, okay? The concept Father comes, God is coming, okay, we've rubbed that to work with the fact of the rapture, which means that the Lord, Jesus himself, will be coming back to take the flock, rapturing them. I want to jump to Matthew 24:31. I'm quoting from Scripture. Now, these are Jesus' words as quoted by Matthew in 24:31. Quote, "And he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other," end quote. Now, that sounds to me like some kind of a big event that's going to happen from above with the great sound of a trumpet. Someone or something is coming together to gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. It sounds like a big event to me, okay? So if that's the event, I think everybody's going to see it or hear about it, okay? So I think that we are in the end times. I think that there's going to be some kind of either an extraterrestrial or a God-sent spiritual event where the elect will be taken from this planet. Because I do think that we are probably already in the beginning phase of Armageddon, if you're a follower of that, or if you have any awareness of what I'm talking about. So I don't want it to drift off into a discussion of Armageddon. That's another whole subject. What I want to keep focusing on is that we have time now to deal with these issues if we can get them identified, get them understood, and get them accepted and presented to the public. We need the troops home. We need to start preparing for this event. It could be literally an earth-shaking event. I'm predicting that we could have a series of horrendous earthquakes and possible volcanic eruptions associated with this event.
If the world stood still, like you're saying it did in 1447
BCE.
Okay,
for Moses.
The tidal waves that would be occurring all over the world and the earthquakes, what we've seen would be indescribable.
Absolutely.
Compared to that.
You're absolutely right. It's on a scale which we couldn't begin to imagine. If you remember what happened in 2004 going to 2005, that horrible 9.0 megaquake in Indonesia that caused the tidal wave. Do you realize that over 250,000 people died in less than 45 minutes?
That's not including the ones that died after the fact.
Absolutely. But I'm saying in that one brief 45 minutes. Now, if that's just a precursor of what's coming, I think we got a lot of worrying to do, but more importantly, we have a lot of preparing to do. We have a lot of understanding to achieve. We have to pull the nation together, first of all, and get it off of its woes and blues and get to work. That's what the priority for this nation should be. That would solve most of our cures. If we could just figure out how to put the nation back to work, getting itself ready for the potential problem, not worrying about it after it occurs. No one should have been down on Galveston Island. Absolutely no one should have been allowed there. Mandatory evacuation, period. Unless we start understanding what we're up against, we're in for a very, very, very tough time. And I don't want to scare anybody. You know, the whole purpose of me talking like this and being on your program is not to scare people. It's nothing to do with being afraid. If anything, now is not the time to be afraid. Now is not the time to be confused. And now is not the time to figure out how to get even with somebody over something you don't even understand. Now is the time to take stock of yourself, your house, your provisions, your pets, your documents, your children, your safety. Now's the time. I will be quoted on this, I'm sure, from time to time. But as of tonight, I'm saying to you, we have got to get our priorities together quickly. And the government, whomever it's going to be, has got to tell us the truth. Get it out there. We're big, bright, strong people. We can take it. Look, we just came through an unbelievable election. We've done something that no other country has ever been able to do in our situation. So what we need to do is think about who we are, where we're going, what we're going to do, why we're going to do it. And if things continue to get bad, all right, let's go on record as of tonight, okay? If by the summer of 2009, there are no appreciable levels or changes in the storms, or if things suddenly become kind of quiet for a while and we don't have to worry, if that should happen, then I would feel a lot better about not worrying what the fall was going to bring. But if we're right, and this coming spring starts out as a horror running with probably fires and tornadoes, then things will either get worse or they'll get a lot better. I'm hoping they'll get better. But if they don't, we talked about it tonight. That should be the point where everyone says, okay, I guess maybe they're right. Maybe we should start getting prepared. So I think the show tonight is important because I'm able to say to you and to express my feelings that what we need to really do is figure out where we're going to go and what we're going to do if things get bad.
Now, you're referring to a show tonight. If you want to say whatever, wherever that show is so people can tune into it, what station? Go ahead.
No, I don't. I don't have any particular station in mind.
Okay.
I was just thinking that. I said tonight, meaning today's show. Okay. Now I want to go back to one dynamic that I probably should explain. It would appear after reading my book that a large part of it was based on what would be known as Christian theology. Well, it wasn't always that way. I tried at the very, very beginning of this project. I vowed to keep away from all religious connotation or any kind of bias in any one way, shape, or fashion. But I wound up after having probably 2,500. Have you ever done 3x5 cards on a wall when you're organizing an idea? Have you ever done that? Well, I must have had about 2,500, almost 3,000 of these cards at one point across one big wall in my living room. And I was constantly changing the cards from place to place, so I wound up with like a million holes in my wall. Of course, that's not the story, but I do have a wall with a million little holes in it. Anyway, every time I began to restructure how the story in the book was working out, it got heavier and heavier and heavier to a religious kind of connotation, which eventually led me to the book of Revelation again.
I have one question for you. Have you ever tried to use the Jewish Bible Code software on any of this information to see what came out?
No, I did not. I did not want to be influenced by someone else's thinking or style. Do you follow me?
Right.
I dug all the information out on my own, pages and pages and pages and books and notes. As I mentioned, I've got 2,000 references. These are posted at the end of each chapter. And there's a complete bibliography of all the books and all the articles that I used to research the project. So what I wanted to kind of close with is that I had no purposeful intention of turning this into anything religious or remotely connected to a religion-based theory. And I'm still not. It's just that I found most of the material that made sense and most of the references that could be actually checked and quoted upon happen to have come from Scripture, both New, Old, and the Book of Revelation. So I wanted to say that, to let everyone know that I was as unbiased as I could possibly be. But the answers are there. And my job is to point you to where I got the answers so that you could find them yourself. And that's what our book is all about. Can I give them the 800 again?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah? Okay. If you'd like to get it, what we're talking about is everything we've written in a book called The Return of Planet X. Okay? And it's a beautiful book, beautiful illustrated. It looks and feels like a beautiful... you ever have a Life magazine? You know how good Life magazine used to feel with the slick pages?
Oh, yeah.
We've got really nice glossy paper and a beautiful cover on it. And it's educational, it's inspirational, it's philosophical, it's religious, it's got all the ingredients of a great mystery. And you can order a book at 1-800-247-6553. 1-800-247-6553. Our website is returnofplanetx.com with a hyphen between the C and the X. And if you would like to get a signed copy, just contact me at skipper@att.net, and we'll work out getting you a signed copy. Now, I've been talking a long time. You've had very few questions.
Well, this is a learning experience. This is a learning experience for me, and whenever somebody has got something to teach me, I keep my mouth shut.
I really deeply appreciate that. I wanted you, I can speak freely, can't I? Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was a little worried coming on your show because I know how strong I am, and I didn't want to say anything that might throw your audience off. You follow me? But I realize you're open-minded, and the funny thing is I'm not talking about anything illicit, immoral, illegal, or wrong. Isn't that wonderful to be able to talk about things that aren't in those categories on the radio? Huh?
And actually mention the government in the same sentence.
Yeah, because, you see, I'm not on a witch hunt. This is not about me versus the government. This isn't about, oh, they're doing bad things. Look, whatever's going on has been going on a lot longer than I've been around here or the present people in charge have been around here. What's been going on has been going on for ages and ages and ages. Our problem is we have to learn how to deal with it now. We've got to figure out how to deal with our problems at this moment. We're looking at a glass. You could say the glass is half full. You know, there are those that say, geez, I only got a half a glass. And then the other side says, yeah, but guess what? At least it's half full. Okay? We're at that point where we can look at this one way or the other. I think that everybody should be assuming that we've got a half-full glass. At least we know where we can get started, okay? And I think that taking a book like mine seriously and reading it and then passing it on to friends and neighbors, I'll let you come to your own conclusion. If I've missed it totally, I've missed it. At least I got everybody prepared because something's coming. We all know something is going to happen.
What do you think the chances are that the governments around the world are actually going to work together?
They already are.
At levels,
yes. Do you buy into any of this awfulness that's going on? Oh, the stuff in India, that's very real. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about all this other stuff. Of course they're working together. I know they are. You know they are. People out there know they are. They think we're all... You know that?
Say that again.
They think we're all stupid. We're not stupid. We know basically what's going on. We just want to know what the facts are. That's all.
Yeah,
I'm ready for your next question.
Has the person you talked to in Russia, that woman that's in charge of their UFO program,
Marina Popovich,
does she actually get anywhere with Putin?
She has access to government levels which are not surprising concern simply because of who she is and what she's done. She's a national heroine. She's a national treasure to Russia. She's a very, very special person that they love and that they adore. Okay? So if I said to her, can you do this or will you do that, she would certainly consider it, and if at all possible, she would do it. See, when we begin to get this program of Project Blue Light up off the ground, I'm hoping that the two governments will come together and work at least together on this UFO ET business. Believe me, the Russians are way ahead of us.
Well, with what we've seen with
the
election...
They're way ahead of us.
With the election...
They always kind of have been, whether we want to say it or not. Do you know that they had lasers back in the 50s that were absolutely deadly weapons, but they didn't use them? We didn't have lasers, not till long afterward. I saw the first actual TV ever built in the world, in Russia, in this small little factory town. And guess what? It still works, because I saw it work myself. Before we had television.
Well, with a government that's, you know, from the top down, so we have dictators in that. I mean, you look how China has built up its industrial might in the last 30 years. The problem we have in this country is everybody's playing both ends against the middle to grab a bigger piece of the pie.
Welcome to capitalism.
Well, I'd call it more than just capitalism. It's corporate.
I suppose I'm sounding sarcastic and tongue-in-cheek, but that sounds like capitalism, doesn't it?
It's corporal rapism is what it is.
Well, watch your language. we may have kids listening.
Yeah,
go ahead.
With the way that this incoming administration has put its cabinet together faster than I've seen anyone do it in my lifetime, have you seen any?
I'm impressed so far. I must tell you, I'm impressed so far. I hope the pace keeps up, and I hope his decisions remain as good as they appear to be. Only time will tell.
Well,
he may decide to govern probably to the right of center, just slightly, to the right of center. See, I don't consider the center anymore conservative. To me, the center has shifted to the left. Okay? So, we will have to see how true he will be to his conscience. Because I think he's bright enough and smart enough to know what's right from wrong. And I don't want to go any further than that, okay?
Well, I know people that know everybody there that's on going to be part of his administration. Mm-hmm. And I was told that they're all going through different levels of some form of repentance, even Hillary.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
good.
As evidence of this...
That's good.
As evidence of this, I challenge anyone to show me a picture since the election took place of anybody in his group having that haughty, arrogant attitude. You look at Hillary on television, her eyes are different. She doesn't have that shrill voice. She looks younger all of a sudden.
You sure it's the real Hillary?
Yeah. Yeah, I know people that know them. It's the real Hillary.
No, I'm just kidding. I like Hillary. I personally like Hillary. I really do. I think she's going to kick some rump. Okay? I don't think she's going to take any BS. So good for her. I hope she goes out there and takes care of business. How's that for an endorsement?
Yeah, well, you know, and if there's anything you want to say on this show that you want mentioned to the top of the government, go ahead and say it, because this, you know, any phone call I make is a live feed through to the NSA.
Well, okay, I'll make an open-ended statement. Whoever is listening out there, by the way, you already have a file. They already have a huge file on me, by the way. I was involved in the Conspiracy 7 trial. I helped catch a spy in Ridgecrest, California, at a naval organization. So I'm not new to them. I'm sure they already have a file on me. So, but the interesting thing is that I'm willing to become part of any kind of a government task force that is interested in honestly and sincerely willing to to take on this UFO ET enigma, which is not an enigma, and it's not a mystery. Everyone already knows about it. I have a plan. I have a TV show that I've written. It's based as a news magazine format program, starting with 30 minutes a week. And we're going to be talking about exclusively UFO, ET, all this kind of stuff on the air, showing live videos. I'm going for it. Okay, I'm going for it big time. Now, if they'd like to join me, we could turn this into a national event, whereby it's no more mystery to anybody anymore. Wouldn't that be nice to tell them the truth through a forms of an entertainment venue? Wouldn't that be nice?
Oh,
no trauma.
Do that now.
No screaming, no trauma. You know, no bad dream. You know? So that's my goal with this mission that I'm on. And the book, Return to Planet X, was written basically with their help to prove the point that we can work with ETs and that I have been ever since I was a child. That's the message. That's the book.
Ezekiel, where it talks about describing a flying saucer.
Wheels within wheels.
Yeah, do you think there's a chance that these ETs that you had met were possibly angelic beings?
No. They don't describe themselves as angelic beings. They don't discuss, nor do they promote religion. To them, the cosmos, the mystery and the majesty of the cosmos and the universe is like their religion, because they respect the laws of nature. They don't look at it as a God figure. To them, God is the universe, not a piece of the... He is the universe. Okay, no, they were not angelic beings. They were humanoids. They were five and a half foot, kind of resembled an oriental look with the oriental eye, small feature, diminutive. I don't want to go any more than that because all in the book I'm writing. No, not angelic, nor were they demonic in any way, shape, or form. I was not abducted. No, nobody messed with me. It was a completely free will experience, and it completely changed my life, as you would imagine it might. Question?
We got about 2 minutes left. Go ahead and just give us your closing thoughts and your contact information once again.
Okay. I'm easily accessible by email, skipper@att.net. See, I don't hide behind any walls. I don't have any illusions. I don't have spy trucks watching me. I'm just doing the right thing. Our email address is skipper@att.net. To order a book would be 1-800-247-6553, or any bookstore. We're on the internet. We're on all of the eBay shows, cheap books, all over the place. Amazon.com. Everybody carries the book. It's readily accessible, and I will even autograph a copy with you if you care to contact me, and we'll work out something for you. See, here's the thing. I'm accessible to the public. I do speaking all the time. I'm constantly doing book signings. People are desperate to understand the truth of what is going on. And that's what we're giving. And we back it up with the information in the book and in our in-person appearances. See? It's not snake oil stuff. It's all stuff you can find on your own, on the internet, or at the bookstore. What we've done is we've assembled all of this information into one volume called Return to Planet X. All the things that we talked about, by the way, this entire hour, all of it, that content is in the book. I've got to send you a copy, by the way.
Say again?
I'm going to send you a copy.
Oh, okay. I'll email you.
You'll
and give
have
you
to
my...
email me where, and because I think it's something that you should also share in and then pass on to your friends and loved ones.
Well, I do hope you're right and what you've testified to is correct, because I've had nothing but the bad experience with the Greys and whatnot, and they're not benevolent.
No. And I'm not saying that reality does not exist. I'm not saying that. That's not part of my experience. That's what
yeah.
I wanted to make clear. I don't deny that it may exist. all I'm saying is that my experience was free of any of that element of, like you say, evil.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure talking with you. You're actually the first person I talked to that claims to have had a positive experience with ETs.
I've had more than one sighting since that age, too, and they've always been friendly. They've always been informational, and it's all part of a mission. You see, I'm not unique in myself. There are 100 or more thousand of us. It all became part of a program that started when we were very, very small children for this very time.
Well, without being rude, I've got to cut it off.
Okay.
This is Eugene B. Colson.
Let's come back and do it again.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. We'll talk to you a little later.
Thank you, everybody. And remember, just be peaceful with yourself. Bye-bye.
And this is Eugene B. Colson at Mind Controlled America, signing off. Have a good day.